Hello, welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today. It is Tuesday, July 20th, and I'm your reader, Kathleen. From the front page of the Gazette today, Making Connections, this story by Grace King. Rising Prairie High School junior Will Vlasic, age 16, spends up to 5 days a week this summer at Prairie High School, caring for a 2.5-acre pumpkin patch planted by ag students in the spring. Will didn't grow up on a farm, but with the Prairie Ag program, he's getting experience with planting, harvesting, and selling produce. More than 1,000 pumpkins will be for sale to the public this fall as a fundraiser for the program. The district is working to develop a 155-acre site where the pumpkin patch and a community garden now sit, directly north of Prairie High School. Last month, the Cedar Rapids City Council approved a resolution authorizing a lease agreement with the College Community School District for a pedestrian tunnel to link the site of the future Ag building and the rest of Prairie High School's campus. The tunnel will be built under 76th Avenue Southwest between Prairie High School and the proposed Prairie Ag Food and Natural Resources building. Superintendent Doug Wheeler said the tunnel will make the campus safely walkable as the agriculture program and district continues to expand. The Prairie Ag Building, a $2.25 million project, will house a classroom, restrooms, a greenhouse, and space to hopefully keep animals, Wheeler said. It is being funded by the 1 cent sales tax. The building is expected to open in November. Prairie High School launched its first ag program and the National FFA Organization chapter in time for the 2020-21 school year. Last year, the district offered an Introduction to Agriculture course at Prairie Point Middle School and Prairie High School for the first time, and 150 students enrolled. This year, the district expects 200 students in the program and is seeking an additional part-time teacher. Erica Beyer, agriculture teacher and National FFA chapter sponsor, said the program is, quote, bigger than a classroom, end quote. The Prairie Ag Building will be essential for students who live in urban settings who have never had the opportunity to be around livestock, grow a garden, or see a greenhouse in full swing, Beyer said. Half of Cedar Rapids Prairie's FFA chapter members, about 30 students, are involved in their county fairs this summer. Many, such as Will Vlasic, are doing so for the first time. Will showed a heifer at the Linn County Fair this summer. He bought the animal in fall 2020 when he started taking classes at Prairie's Ag program and joined the school's FFA chapter. He won third in his class for Angus heifers and was named Reserve Champion Showman. Will also will head to the Iowa State Fair next month to show and present on a John Deere G tractor he restored, for which he received a purple ribbon at the Linn County Fair. Sydney DeVokey, age 16, will take 3 dairy cows and 8 dairy goats to the Johnson County Fair next week. Sydney showed her first animal in 4th grade, a dairy goat named Toots she still shows to this day. My goal is to finish out my 4-H career with her, Sydney said. Sydney also is doing extemporaneous speaking about no-sew t-shirt bags that can be reused 7,100 times versus plastic bags, which can be reused 4 times. Being involved in 4-H and now being an FFA member has given Sydney more confidence and improved her leadership skills, she said. She's looking forward to continuing agriculture classes at Prairie and hopes to become a large animal veterinarian. Keegan Ulrich, age 17, a rising senior at Prairie, feels a sense of ownership over the pumpkin patch. We can do more over here than in a room at the high school, Keegan said, while watering pumpkins last week. Ben Healy, 15, a rising sophomore, is excited he gets to be in the ag program all 4 years of his high school career. He likes the hands-on opportunity. Experience is better than sitting in a classroom, Healy said. Also on the front page today, this story by Gage Miskeman, a 1 cent sales tax extension goes to rural voters. Voters in rural Linn County and most Cedar Rapids metro area communities will decide in November whether to extend an existing local option sales tax and other cities are set to say later this month whether to join the ballot also. The Linn County Board of Supervisors meeting Monday in a work session became the latest to officially join the November 2 ballot question, agreeing to put it before voters in unincorporated areas. With Linn County's vote, it joins the cities of Cedar Rapids, Marion, and Fairfax in approving ballot language to go to voters. The city councils of Hiawatha and Roberts expect to vote on it this month. In May, leaders from the five cities and the county announced they would advocate for an extension of the existing 1 cent sales tax used to fund infrastructure and other initiatives through 2034. The tax for all communities is currently set to expire in 2024. Voters would have to agree if the tax, which increased the sales tax from 6% to 7%, is to be extended. A simple majority of voters in the metro area cities collectively is required to pass the measure. Rural residents or non-contiguous Linn County cities can decide their outcomes independently. Elected officials in the municipalities decide how their communities will use the revenue. In Cedar Rapids, the extra sales tax money is devoted to the Paving for Progress Street Upgrade and Replacement Initiative. At the May news conference, Linn County Supervisor Louis Zumbach said he thinks it's important for rural residents to vote to extend the sales tax. "It's a plus for anyone who lives here to vote for this," he said during the news conference. "This is extremely important for rural residents, as it is for urbans." Across the entire Cedar Rapids metro area, the local communities collectively gain $31 million a year in revenue from the extra sales tax. In fiscal 2021, the county received about $6.3 million in the extra sales tax funds, according to the Iowa Department of Revenue. Voters who live in unincorporated Linn County voted for 50% of the funds to go toward improving the secondary road system, 25% to go to conservation projects and programs, and 25% for property tax relief. For fiscal 2020, $2.7 million of the county local option funding was budgeted for road construction, $1.5 million for conservation projects, and $1.5 million for property tax relief. Over the last decade, the county secondary roads department has received $36 million in the funds. The money has helped the department's five-year construction program by paving 106 miles of roads, completing three bridge projects and three culvert replacements. Around $8 million in the extra funding has helped leverage completion of $28 million in projects over the period the revenue has been available. Specific projects include the Mary Lundby Bridge connecting the campground to the day use park at Pinnacon Ridge, modern restrooms and playgrounds at Pinnacon Ridge, trail development at the Cedar Valley Nature Trail north of Cedar Rapids, and the Highway 100 trail connection through Morgan Creek Park. Last week, supervisors also passed a resolution to place a gambling referendum on the same November ballot. The question for voters countywide will be whether to renew permission to allow licensed gambling in Linn County, which would open the door for Cedar Rapids to try again to seek authorization from state regulators to build a casino. Linn County voters overwhelmingly supported gambling in 2013, but the permission expires if not renewed. Voter approval of the measure on a second consecutive attempt would permanently authorize licensed gambling within the county if the state were to grant a license here. Moving now to the Iowa Today page, a fatal house explosion blamed on a gas leak. This by Kaylin McCain for the Southeast Iowa Union. A gas leak caused a house explosion that killed a man and injured a child. An investigation has it concluded. The gas vapors filled the confined space of the apartment, which were ignited when the occupant lit a cigarette, the news release said. The source of that gas leak is undetermined. The explosion, early January 4, destroyed the home at 1114 East Washington Street and damaged several other adjacent houses. George Carpenter, age 68, died 3 days after the explosion. A house next door to the explosion was damaged so badly it was demolished in March. The investigation involved the state fire marshal, the city's fire and police departments, and the Johnson County Medical Examiner, according to news release from the Washington Fire Department. The investigation was delayed by poor weather in February, and investigators returned to the site in early April to resume work. This is all the further information that will be provided at this time, Fire Chief Brendan DeLong said in an email. And in Iowa City, police find over 50 shell casings while investigating reports of shots fired, this story by Kat Russell. Police found more than 50 shell casings when responding to a shots fired incident Sunday in Iowa City. According to the Iowa City Police Department, officers were called just after 4 a.m. to the 500 block of South Scott Boulevard for reports of multiple gunshots. Iowa City Police Captain Denise Brotherton, commander of the Field Operation Division, said 911 dispatchers at the Johnson County Joint Emergency Communications Center fielded 5 or 6 911 calls reporting gunfire. Investigators said evidence indicated more than 50 shots had been fired from multiple weapons. The initial investigation indicates the shooting was coming from more than one direction, Brotherton said. Police said vehicles and buildings in the area were damaged, but no injuries were reported. Brotherton said investigators still are working to determine the total extent of damage. No arrests have been made. Police said they do not think the shooting was random, and the initial investigations indicates the shooting likely involved people who knew each other, Brotherton said. Anyone with information regarding this incident is asked to call the Iowa City Police Department at 319-356-5275. Police also are asking anyone with security cameras in the area to review their recordings and contact the Iowa City Police Department with any potential footage or information relative to the case. This story also on the Iowa Today page, a barn collapse in Cedar Falls kills a father and son. A barn collapsed Friday, killing a father and his young son, had been moved and installed on a concrete pad the day before, according to a friend of the family. Andy Kaufman, age 40, and his 9-year-old son, Beckett, were killed in the 6:30 p.m. collapse on the family's rural Cedar Falls property at 9702 Viking Road. They moved it from a different location, said neighbor Trey Nuss, who described Andy as his best friend. He was in their yard for a month or so on a trailer. He helped pour concrete a couple weeks ago for the pad where the barn was placed Thursday near the family's house. Renovation work was planned before it would be used to house animals. It was an unfortunate accident, Cedar Falls Fire Chief John Bostwick said. The Public Safety Department's Fire Division responded to the incident. Captain Mark Herbst of the Blackhawk County Sheriff's Office said deputies hadn't turned in their report yet on the accident, but confirmed the barn had been moved onto the property. He didn't expect much more information to come out about the collapse. What everybody needs to know is that Andy was so overly cautious with anything with his kids, Nuss said. There's no way, if there was any danger, that Andy saw that he would have had his kids anywhere near it. Andy and his wife Brooke have 4 other children, a son and 3 daughters. He worked for an insurance company in Redden. Beckett finished 3rd grade at Dyke Elementary School in the spring. Nuss said the family has a little bit of everything in terms of animals: chickens, goats, ducks, rabbits, and a tortoise. They acquired the barn as a place to care for the animals and teach responsibility to the children. He liked the hobby farming, if you want to call it that, Nuss said of Andy. The biggest reason he was doing it all was for the kids. When the collapse occurred, it was just Andy and Beckett working on it at the time, Nuss said. We got a phone call that the barn had fallen, and I went over immediately to try and help. A fundraising website was created by Jessup Community Betterment, a nonprofit that fundraises for families in need with ties to Jessup. Brooke is preschool teacher with Jessup Community Schools, according to the district's website. Nuss said Andy and Beckett will be deeply missed. There's a big hole there for sure, he said. In other Iowa Today news, this story by Kat Russell, one killed and one injured in a two-vehicle wreck in Linn County. One person died and another was injured in a two-vehicle crash Monday morning in Linn County near Central City and Alburnett. An unidentified male driver was pronounced dead at the scene, according to the Linn County Sheriff's Office. His identity is being withheld pending notification of the family. The sheriff's office said Eric Carl, age 42, of Coggin, was driving south on Alburnett Road when he failed to stop at the stop sign at Alburnett and Central City Roads. He crashed his vehicle into another that was headed east on Central City Road and driven by the unidentified man. Carl was taken to Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids with injuries that appeared to be not life-threatening. The accident is under investigation, the sheriff's office said. And police in Mount Vernon say a woman stabbed her boyfriend while claiming she'd kill him. This story by Kat Russell. A Mount Vernon woman was arrested after she stabbed her boyfriend while threatening to kill him, authorities said. Deputies were called just after 9:15 p.m. Thursday to a residence at 969 Ivanhoe Circle in rural Mount Vernon for reports of a stabbing. Emergency personnel find Cherania Triggs, age 28, and Kevin Goucher, age 58, were involved in an altercation during which Triggs had stabbed Goucher. The sheriff's office said Triggs and Goucher were involved in an intimate relationship and lived together at that residence. The criminal complaint states Triggs plunged a 12-inch knife into his upper left chest while claiming, "I will kill you." Goucher was taken to a hospital. Triggs was booked into the Linn County Jail on Friday, jail records shows. Triggs faces charges of willful injury causing bodily injury and assault while displaying a dangerous weapon, which is domestic abuse. And another Iowa Today story, local groups push for fund to aid excluded workers in Johnson County. This story by Kayla McCullough. As Johnson County area governments devise how to spend an estimated $55 million in relief funds from the American Rescue Plan, local activists are pushing for the county to create an excluded workers fund to get money to people not covered under federal and state COVID-19 relief. In the joint entities meeting of Johnson County governments on Monday, officials say they are soliciting public feedback on how best to distribute the funds. Johnson County will receive $29.36 million from the relief package passed in March, and Iowa City will be receiving $18.33 million. Johnson County's other city governments are expected to receive close to $8 million, according to the state's virus website. Johnson County and Iowa City received half of the funds in May and June, and we will receive the other half in around a year. Smaller cities will be receiving their funds from the state. Representatives from the Fund Excluded Workers Coalition spoke at the meeting, urging officials to put the federal dollars toward an excluded workers fund. The coalition is made up of groups including the Iowa City Truth and Reconciliation Commission, Catholic Worker House, and the Iowa Freedom Riders. They're asking for $54 million, their estimate of all the federal dollars going to the combined Johnson County governments, to be provided for undocumented immigrants, previously incarcerated people, and unemployed workers. They're also asking the governments to put that money toward hazard pay for low-wage essential workers, affordable housing, and public transportation. You have the opportunity to help people who've been hurting and are continuing to suffer even more as we're emerging from this pandemic, said David De La Torre, president of the League of United Latin American Citizens Council 308. The time is now to support our workers. Jeff Fruin, Iowa City manager, said the city is hosting online surveys and providing in-person opportunities for public input, planning to present that data to the council in the fall. Our intention is to get in front of our city council in Iowa City in September with some synopsis of that public input and kind of help them begin that process of prioritizing use of the funds that we've received, he said. Pat Hayden, chair of the Johnson County Board of Supervisors, said the county has been taking similar measures with an online survey, public forums, and plans to distribute the survey at the Johnson County Fair. Officials said they were interested in collaborating across governments to distribute the funds. Moving now to the Insight page, the guest editorial is a reprint from the Dallas Morning News, taking cyber attacks seriously. We're barely a month out from the Colonial Pipeline hacking, perpetuated by the Russian-speaking hacking group DarkSide, which left thousands of Americans without gas, preventing many from accessing food or medicine. Not long after that was the attack on JBS, the world's largest meat supplier, which shut down multiple processing plants, perpetuated by Russian cyber criminal group REvil. 2 weeks ago, REvil hacked Kaseya, a U.S.-based software company, which affected 800 to 1,500 businesses. One of these businesses, Coop, a Swedish grocer, will take weeks to recover after the hacking shut down 800 of its physical storefronts. Coop paid $70 million to appease the criminals. The ripples also affected Leonardtown, Maryland, as city administrators lost all access to their systems. How has President Joe Biden addressed the problem? After the Colonial Pipeline attack, he declared an executive order calling for collaboration between the public and private sectors to iron out digital defense issues. And we learned the hard way that it will take more than that to deal with this crisis. Then Biden addressed the issue at a summit with Putin. The attacks have continued. Most recently, Biden called Putin and reiterated that the United States will take any necessary action to defend its people and its critical infrastructure in the face of this continuing challenge. When asked at a news conference if there would be consequences, Biden responded, "Yes." We needed to set some clear boundaries, some definite consequences that would get Vladimir Putin's attention. And from what little we know, it looks like we might have succeeded in that. Once Biden called out Putin on the issue one-on-one, hacked giant REvil disappeared. In mid-January, cybersecurity became a principal topic of the summit between Biden and Putin. In a news conference, Biden said he gave a list to Putin listing 16 specific entities, 16 defined as critical infrastructure under U.S. policy, which are off-limits to attack. He followed this comment saying, "Of course, the principle is one thing. It has to be backed by practice. Responsible countries need to take action against criminals who conduct ransomware activities on their territory." While the process of shutting down REvil still is in the dark, this looks like a good example of Biden backing up his words. "We provided consequences. Either Putin wrangles the hackers harbored in Russia's borders, or the U.S. takes swift, decisive action to protect American assets." We hope that this signals a future of cooperation with Russia on the issue of cybercrime, as well as standing firm against Russia when their inaction results in American losses. And again, that's a reprint from the Dallas Morning News. Adam Sullivan's At Liberty column today is titled, "Iowa Going Wrong Way on Overdoses." Iowa saw a 20% increase in drug overdose deaths between 2019 and 2020, up to 350 last year, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention figures released last week. Nationally, there was a 29% increase in overdose deaths to a record high of 93,000. Republicans say the uptick proves the COVID-19 lockdowns were bad, while Democrats say it underscores the need for even bigger government investments in health care. Both sides think it justifies their support for ever-growing law enforcement budgets. Drug use is complicated, and there is no policy solution for eliminating its harmful effects. Smarter pandemic restrictions and better health resource allocation could have a beneficial impact, but throwing more money at police agencies almost certainly will not. That's what's often missing in the discussion on drug overdose, that the government and its enforcement regime is exacerbating the crisis. Prohibition makes drugs more dangerous, and we're suffering the deadly effects of our drug-busting status quo. Opioids are the drugs most often involved in overdose death in Iowa and the nation. They have been a top target of police and policymakers for years. However, opioid use is not a single phenomenon. It's a whole class of drugs that people use several different ways for many reasons. A favorite response by politicians and bureaucrats is to crack down on prescription opioids, such as the painkillers, hydrocodone, and oxycodone. The Iowa legislature in 2018 unanimously passed a bill to expand the state's prescription drug monitoring program, requiring healthcare providers to report opioid prescriptions to a government database. The goal is to prevent patients from doctor shopping by getting drugs from more than one provider. That and a similar prescription restriction appear to be correlated with prescription overdoses flattening out, but that gave rise to something much worse. In the past decade, a certain subset of synthetic opioids have overtaken heroin and commonly prescribed opioids as the largest share of opioid-related deaths. Annually, there now are far more synthetic opioid deaths than have ever been attributed to heroin or common prescription opioids in a single year. Most common is fentanyl, which is cheaper and more potent than heroin, giving manufacturers and sellers an incentive to mix it in with or pass it off as another substance, a totally foreseeable consequence of restricting the drug supply. So far this year in Iowa, fentanyl and similar substances have been involved in 87% of opioid overdose deaths, Iowa Department of Public Health officials told the Des Moines Register. In short, we made it harder for people to access relatively safe drugs in a medical setting, and some of them predictably turned to street drugs of unknown origin and quality. Here's a radical idea. Just let people buy drugs at the store instead. People have been taking mind-altering substances for thousands of years, and it's foolish to think the government can stop them. Instead, we should give people the tools for safer drug use. One of those tools is the drugs themselves. And again, that's Adam Sullivan. We have one letter to the editor today. We need a mayor who will rise above the drama. Wow, waking up to a front-page headline about political drama doesn't happen very often in Cedar Rapids, but when Mayor Brad Hart is on record acting a fool on a nonprofit executive director's voicemail, it's no surprise the Gazette devoted nearly a page of the Saturday paper to cover the spectacle. But where is the drama, really? Improv Incubators made an agreement with CSPS to host an event on July 17. Improv Incubators also had an agreement with Amara Andrews to make a guest appearance. If such an appearance violates the Johnson Amendment, then where was the outcry when Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, and former Mayor Ron Corbett appeared at the same venue? Following Mr. Hart's logic, the Cedar Rapids city government should be accused of endorsing then-President Donald Trump for leasing city-owned Alliant Energy Powerhouse space in his campaign in June of 2017. I'm voting for a candidate who cares about social issues in Cedar Rapids and will not occupy her time with ridiculous gossip. I'm voting for a candidate who is a proven leader and has worked hard to represent people in Cedar Rapids who are often ignored. I'm voting for Amara Andrews because she is clearly the best candidate for mayor of Cedar Rapids. And that is signed by Andrea Lorenz Norris from Cedar Rapids. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Tuesday, July 20th, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. And now we turn to today's obituary page. In the other notices, from Brandon, Dennis McFarland, age 77, died Monday, July 19, Phillips Funeral Home, Vinton. In Cedar Rapids, Ronald Baker, age 53, died Monday, July 19, Phillips Funeral Home, Vinton. From Cedar Rapids, Dolores M. Leach, age 85, died Saturday, July 17. Iowa Cremation Service is in charge. In Dysart, Carol Carlisle, age 79, died Saturday, July 17. The Van Steen Heist Funeral Home in Vinton. Independence, Sarah A. Shannon, age 93, died Saturday, July 17. The Reef Family Center in Independence is in charge. From Lansing, Benjamin J. Kernt, age 26, of rural Lansing, died Thursday, July 15. Martin Grau Funeral Home in Waukon is assisting. In Marion, Stephen D. Reck, age 67, died Sunday, July 18. The Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Marion, is in charge. In Monticello, David Weber, age 65, died Sunday, July 18. The Getch Funeral Home in Monticello is assisting the family. In Tama, Gordon M. Blocker, age 85, died Sunday, July 18. The Cruz Phillips Funeral Home, Tama Toledo, is in charge. In West Liberty, Ruth Fares McGowan, age 89, died Saturday, July 17. Also in West Liberty, Dennis Lloyd Walks, age 78, died Sunday, July 18. Henderson Barker Funeral Home in West Liberty is in charge for both families. Moving now to the regular notices. From Marion, Winifred Joyce Parson, age 78, of Marion, Iowa, fell asleep in death on July 15th of various health issues. A virtual memorial service via Zoom will be held at a later date. There will be a private family burial. From Longmont, Colorado, Dennis, known as Denny Pearson, age 68, passed away Tuesday, July 6th at his home. The family will hold a celebration of life from 1 to 4 p.m. August 21st at Jones Park Lagoon Pavilion. From Cedar Rapids, Faye Kerbs, age 95, died Thursday, July 15, at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy in Hiawatha. Services were held at Cottage Grove Place. Tian Funeral Home and Cremation is serving the family. From Cedar Rapids, Thomas, known as Tom John Lindley, age 58, of Cedar Rapids, passed away unexpectedly at his home Saturday, July 17. Services are at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, July 22nd at First Assembly of God by the Reverend Rick Gale. A visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, July 21st at Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home and after 9:30 a.m. Thursday at the church. From Cedar Rapids, Lyle L. Servin, age 69, died Monday, June 28th. A celebration of life will be held at 1:30 p.m. Tuesday, July 20, at Mission of Hope, 1700 B Avenue Northeast in Cedar Rapids. In Iowa City, Shirley M. McFarland, age 92, of Iowa City, formerly of Marshalltown and Estes Park, Colorado, died Wednesday, July 14 at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City. Memorial services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, July 23 at First Presbyterian Church in Iowa City with interment in the church's columbarium. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service Friday at the church. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations can be made in her memory to the Iowa Public Radio, NAMI of Johnson County, or Eastern Iowa Chapter of the Alzheimer's Foundation. In Cedar Rapids, Jason, known as Redneck Everett O'Connor, age 44, of Cedar Rapids, passed away at 5:15 p.m. Thursday, July 15 at St. Luke's Hospital. Celebration of Life Gathering will be from 3 to 8 Friday, July 23 at the Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center in Cedar Rapids, 2121 Bowling Street Southwest. Jason's last ride will begin at 2 p.m. Saturday, July 24 from Brosh Chapel and will travel to North Point Bar located at 621 Center Point Road Northeast, where his celebration of life will begin at 3 p.m. on Saturday. From Cedar Rapids, Donald James, known as Jim Scala, age 70, passed away Sunday, July 18, at Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. From Marion, Susan, known as Sue Dietert, age 65, passed away Friday, July 16, at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Celebration of life will be from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday, July 24, at Antioch Christian Church in Marion. Arrangements are by Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Service in Marion. From Center Point, Ida Mae Barker, age 71, passed away July 18 at her home. Visitation will be held from 1:30 to 2:30 Saturday, July 24, at Cedar Memorial Chapel of Memories, with a memorial service to follow at 2:30 p.m. From Epworth, Barbara Ann Hollub, age 82, of Epworth, formerly of Cascade, passed away Sunday, July 18, at her home, surrounded by her family. The family will greet family and friends from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thursday, July 22, at St. Peter's Catholic Church in Temple Hill, Iowa. Services will be held at 1 p.m. with the Reverend Mark Osterhaus presiding. Burial will be held at a later date. From Manchester, Vonda M. Nodurf Billhorn, age 90, passed away Tuesday, July 13, while on vacation with her daughters in Montana. Visitation for Vonda will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Thursday, July 22nd, at the Bonenkamp Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Manchester. Funeral service for Vonda will be 10:30 a.m. Friday, July 23rd, at First Evangelical Lutheran, with the Reverend Tony Eady officiating. Additional visitation will be 1 hour prior to services Friday at the church. Burial will take place at Oakland Cemetery in Manchester. From Solon, Josephine Joyce Carpenter, formerly of Mount Vernon, died July 4. According to her wishes, Joyce departs with no public fanfare. Memorial donations may be made to the Mount Vernon Lisbon Food Pantry, Goodwill, or KCCK Radio. And lastly, also from Solon, Gail I. Grissel Wall, age 70, of Solon, passed away Monday, July 19, at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy in Hiawatha, due to a lengthy illness. Private family burial will take place. There will be no services. Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. Now moving to the sports page, lots of softball and baseball stories in today's sports section, so I will read some abbreviated articles. First, from high school baseball, Linmar finds a way to get it done, this by K.J. Pilcher. The Lions are 7-2 over their last nine, despite finishing the regular season with a losing record. Most importantly, the Lions are 2-0 in the postseason. We've had our ups and downs, Linmar's Kane Dutmeyer said. Right now we're up, so just keep it rolling. Linmar scored 4 runs in an unusual 6th inning and outlasted Cedar Rapids Kennedy 8-7 in a Class 4A Substate 4 semifinal last night at Herkelman Field. The Lions posted 2 one-run victories in as many playoff games. They responded well the last 2 rounds, Linmar coach Kyle Rodenkirk said. They're starting to believe in each other and what they have. It's fun. The game included 5 lead changes through the first 5.5 innings. The Cougars received solo home runs from Dylan Davis and Brendan Groth. Davis's came with 2 outs in a 2-run third. Groth's came an inning later. Wiley Sullivan added a 2-out, 2-run single in the 5th to give Kennedy its last lead at 5-4. The 6th, however, tilted the scales to the Lions' favor, but it wasn't how they planned it. And in a softball story, North Lynn unpacks, this also by Jeff Linder. It's not only a business trip, not with a day off, mostly off today. We're going to Decker's Sporting Goods. I'll get a sweatshirt and some t-shirts that I don't need, senior Caitlin Sommerfeld said. As for tonight, we'll be playing Wii. As was the case the last 2 years, North Lynn is going to make a full week of it in Fort Dodge. The second-ranked Lynx took control with a 4-run uprising in the bottom of the 3rd inning and defeated number 14 Iowa City Regina 5-2 in a Class 2A quarterfinal at the state softball tournament last night at the Rogers Sports Complex. Bring on the Wii, then bring on the semifinals. North Lynn, at 40-6, the state champion in 2019 and runner-up last year, will face number 5 Central Springs, 30 and 6 at 1:30 Wednesday afternoon. The lynx know when to go hard, and they know how to have fun. Sometimes they can multitask and do both at the same time. And Lisbon returns to the semis for the fourth straight year. Raleigh Allgood was clueless. "I don't know anything until after the game," she said. "Really? No peeks at the scoreboard?" "Nope," she insisted. "I looked at the scoreboard, but just to see how many runs we had." Plenty. Fourth-ranked Lisbon clicked in all phases and routed number 11 Clarksville 10-0 in a five-inning Class 1A quarterfinal at the state softball tournament Monday afternoon at the Rogers Sports Complex. Allgood pitched the 57th no-hitter in state tournament history, the first by a Lisbon pitcher since Paige Stamp did it in 1996. And the Lions, at 36-8, gave her a wealth of support. Peyton Robinson was a 4-for-4, highlighting a 10-hit attack, and the Lions marched to a 1A semifinals for the fourth straight year. They'll face number 2 Wayne, 24-4, at 1 p.m. on Wednesday. In a Class 4A story, this by Cully Klein, Morgan and the Trojans can't stop the Tigers. It was the end of the line for Iowa City West, and a highly decorated high school career came to a close. Cedar Falls put up a handful of crooked numbers en route to a 12-8 victory in Class 4A sub-state semifinal last night at West. West High at 22-15, multi-sport star Marcus Morgan wore a Trojan uniform for the final time, although he did all he could to keep the season alive. Morgan, who will continue his baseball career at the University of Iowa, drove in 6 and scored 2. "That's Marcus," West High coach Charlie Stumpf said. "He's been a great kid this year with a lot of young guys. He's a once-in-a-lifetime kind of guy to coach. He is a special player, whether it be on the mound or hitting. He's going to do well at the next level. We got to experience a few years with him, and that's pretty cool." Morgan's output couldn't keep pace with the Tigers. 6 West High pitchers combined to allow 9 hits while issuing 8 walks and hitting 4 batters. The Trojans committed a pair of errors in the field. Cedar Falls scored 9 of their runs with 2 outs. West High's Nate Gudenkoff singled in the bottom of the opening frame. Morgan followed with a 2-run blast over the right center field wall, his 6th home run of the season. Cedar Falls responded in the top of the second. 3 straight walks and an error led to a 5-run inning. Down 7-3, entering the bottom of the fourth, Morgan struck again. The Trojans loaded the bases with 1 out. Morgan doubled to left center, plating 2. Morgan came around to score on the RBI groundout from Kate Atkins, tying the score 7-7. In the softball quarterfinals today, in Class 3A, Mount Vernon plays at 11 a.m. versus Estherville-Lincoln Central, and at 11:30 a.m., Williamsburg versus West Liberty. In Class 4A, at 1 o'clock, Winterset plays Oskaloosa. At 1:30, Carlisle faces Boone. At 3 p.m., Western Dubuque faces North Polk. Adel ADM plays Clear Creek Amana at 3:30. In the Class 5A quarterfinals, Pleasant Valley plays Southeast Polk. Iowa City High plays Ankeny Centennial. At 7 p.m., Fort Dodge faces Bettendorf, and at 7:30, Waukee faces Cedar Rapids Kennedy. Moving now to the community page, here are some things to do today. In the Sports and Rec Bicyclists of Iowa, Tuesday two-wheelers ride. Rides range from 20 to 40 miles in length at speeds from 12 to 15 miles per hour. Faster riders may break away. Anyone is welcome to keep pace or fall back with the larger group. There usually is a refreshment stop mid-ride. That takes place from 9 a.m. to noon. Starts at the Solon Recreation Center at 700 West Sovers Street in Solon. It's free and available for all ages. In the crafts area, family hobby do-it-your-way crafts. Prepackaged crafts for kids. Do the craft with the group outside the library or take it home. In case of heavy rain or severe weather, the event will be canceled, but crafts may be picked up. That takes place from 10 to 10:30 at the Ely Public Library today at 1595 Dowes Street. Again, that is free and available for all ages. In the health and fitness category, yoga for mental health. Experience a 45-minute gentle flow yoga class taught by a licensed therapist and yoga instructor. In-person and online options are available. In-person spots are limited. Bring your own yoga mat. More available at covenantfamilysolutions.com. That takes place online from noon to 12:45. The cost is $15 and open to all ages. And the food and community category, Field to Families Online Farmers Market. Field to Families contact-free online farmers market is occurring weekly in Iowa City. The order period is noon Tuesday through noon Wednesday weekly at orders.fieldtofamily.org, and pickup is Saturday morning at the Johnson County Health and Human Services parking ramp in Iowa City. The cost varies depending on your order. In the education category, Mobile Technology Lab at Hayes Park. The Cedar Rapids Roland Recmobile is bringing activities for all ages to the community. And today it's at 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. at Hayes Park, 1924 D Street in Cedar Rapids. The cost is free and open to all ages. And in the family outdoor category, Summer Shorts, Iowa City, the Iowa Children's Museum is heading outside to provide hands-on fun while inspiring participants to continue playing all summer. That takes place at Happy Hollow Park in Iowa City today, 6:30 to 8 p.m., and it is free and open to all ages. Here are a few Eastern Iowa briefs. Residents invited to an August 10 derecho anniversary event. The City of Cedar Rapids is hosting a free event on August 10 to commemorate the impact the derecho had on the city and residents and celebrate coming together to support each other during a disaster. Join city leaders, staff, and first responders from 10:30 a.m. to noon at Beaver Park Pavilion, 2700 Beaver Avenue Southeast, for a tree planting ceremony, followed by lunch and interactive activities. Local food truck vendors will provide free lunch while supplies last. The city also will provide information about disaster preparedness, community replanting efforts, and free giveaways. Emergency responders and city staff will be on hand to speak with residents and answer questions. Drive-through food box giveaway takes place on Saturday. Together We Achieve's next drive-through food box giveaway will be from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Sunday at Jefferson High School, 1243 20th Street Southwest in Cedar Rapids. This is a first-come, first-serve event and no registration is required. Please enter off 18th Street. The drive-through event is part of Together We Achieve's 12K in 2021 program, where 12,000 food boxes will be distributed throughout the community in 2021. And a community corn harvest starts July 29. Volunteers are needed. Volunteers are needed to help with a community corn harvest at Dow's Farm, 622 Dow's Road, Cedar Rapids. The harvest is scheduled for July 29 through August 8. 7 acres of corn is available for neighbors in need. Volunteers needed for picking corn as well as helping to guide people for parking, picking, and other important tasks. Free sweet corn will be available. Parking is limited, so volunteers are asked to sign up for shifts. Sign up at silt.org/cornharvest. If you need assistance in getting signed up, contact Julie, julie@olivetmissions.org. And cycling to awareness, the Iowa City Bike Library ride to highlight racial inequities then and now. This story by Caleb McCullough. In a spacious garage at the Iowa City Bike Library, past rows of old bikes, boxes are waited to be spread out around Iowa City for the Bike Library's upcoming ride, highlighting racial-related sites, racial justice-related sites in Iowa City. The boxes, which the ride's organizers called apparatuses, are 2 feet high, each covered in a vinyl collage that exhibit the purpose of the ride, images of protest, of black leaders and historical figures, and important historical sites. Each one has a speaker, sensors, and will be fitted to play an audio clip at each of the 5 sites along the ride's route. The ride, called Raise It Up, takes Iowa City cyclists through historical and present-day sites that exhibit the history and effects of racial injustice in Iowa City and across the country. Riders will be able to hear accompanying audio that tells them the significance of the site and the broader story it fits in, either through the apparatuses or through their phones. It's a little textbook-y, but it's like listening to an educational podcast while you're on the edge of your seat, said Sarah McGurk, the Bike Library's volunteer coordinator, who organized the ride and narrates much of the audio. The audio clips, about 12 minutes long each, include McGurk's narration, music by local artists, excerpts from protest speeches, local leaders, and interviews with activists and experts. The ride stretches 10 miles, and if riders stop and listen to the full audio at each location, will take about 2 hours. The Bike Library is asking people to pre-register on the shop's website at icbikelibrary.org and get necessary materials when the ride launches. While the ride originally had a planned launch date of early July, development took longer, and the group is now aiming to have the materials out by the beginning of August. The concept for the ride began in 2020 when trying to design alternatives to a large guided group ride. Before the pandemic, the nonprofit organized a farm cycle ride in which riders visited various local farms and got to eat food sourced from those farms. The model they developed for Raise It Up can be done solo or in a group. And as pandemic restrictions have eased, the Bike Library is planning to host 4 larger volunteer group rides. The Bike Library collaborated with several area creators and organizations to put the ride together, bringing in designers, researchers, text experts, and many others. Research was done in collaboration with Humanity in Action, Tracy John Sargent from the Multicultural Development Center of Iowa, and DeVale Gates, who does custom fashion designs under the name Victory Over Odds, also contributed. Audrey Wiedemeyer, the library's executive director, said the work with the community partners was vital to making the project happen. There's a lot of really talented people who are excited about the project and who want to see it succeed, she said. The subject matter for the ride was inspired by the movement for racial justice that erupted in 2020. The route brings riders face-to-face with how national trends of racial inequity can be felt in Iowa City, McGurk said. For example, riders will visit the Tate Arms House, a house that offered dormitory-style boarding for black students at the University of Iowa before the university allowed black students in the dorms. At the stop, riders will hear from the University of Iowa professor Colin Gordon about the history of housing discrimination and how it created segregation in cities across the U.S. that is still felt today. The community can learn about how equity issues are not just something on a national scale or from a historical perspective, but these issues are right here in Iowa City and people don't even notice, McGurk said. In the future, the Bike Library plans to create new routes that focus on different areas. She hopes to partner with other organizations that can help tell other important stories. It would probably be the kind of thing where we figure out what's most needed, like come 2022, what are the issues going to be then? We'll finish off with a recap of the eastern Iowa weather. Mostly sunny, partly cloudy for the next several days. Normally our high for today is 85 and a low of 64. Records were set, a high of 105 in 1901 and a record low of 50 in 2009. Sunset tonight is at 8:37, sunrise tomorrow at 5:50 a.m., giving us 14 hours and 48 minutes of daylight. That brings us to the end of the reading for today's Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, July 20. I've been your reader, Kathleen. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening and have a great, safe day.